Coming up right now is The Space Show.
This is your community radio station, 88.3 Southern FM.
And we're going to start with The Ring of Fire by the Waratahs, who come from New Zealand.
It make a fiery ring, bound by wild desire. I fell into a ring of fire. Yeah, I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went up high. And it burned, burned, burned. That ring of fire, that ring of fire. Yeah, I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, down, down. That ring of fire, that ring of fire. Yeah, I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went up high. And it burned, burned, burned. That ring of fire, that ring of fire. That ring of fire, that ring of fire.
And if you keep listening to The Space Show, you'll find out why that song, The Ring of Fire, from the Waratahs from New Zealand, is relevant. Well, welcome to The Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie, and on the panel in Mission Control, way back on Earth, we have Richard. Now, to The Ring of Fire. Oh, by the way, on today's program, yes, we have some Australian news, industry news. So, to the Ring of Fire. Well, as most of you probably know by now, Gilmore Space, the company, who work in Queensland, they launched their Eris rocket after waiting 18 months on the launch pad to get this rocket away. Delays caused by regulatory problems and all sorts of things. Well, we'll tell you a bit more about it, but first of all, let's go to the Aussienaut, who's an online streamer, and he had his camera set up about 9 kilometres away. Now, I know that because there was a 27-second delay from when the rocket was launched to when you could hear it launch. And since sound travels at 3 seconds per kilometre, divided by 3, 27 divided by 3 is 9 kilometres. So he's 9 kilometres from the launch site. Anyway, here is how he commented on what happened.
Okay, we're going, we're going, we're going, it's going, it's going, it's going, it's going. Oh, okay, it's hovering, it's hovering, it's hovering, it's hovering. It's gone. It's gone. Oh, no. It didn't go. There wasn't sufficient thrust to actually keep it up. It slid straight off the pad. There wasn't sufficient thrust. That tells me that's the thrust. There's the sound. There's the sound. Unfortunately, it went sideways. I believe that's the end of the Eris rocket. We have a cloud, and that's the end. So that tells me that the way the rocket reacted, there was insufficient thrust available for it to actually launch off the pad. It was enough for it to release, but it wasn't enough for it to actually get to orbit. So, yeah, so what we've got now is we've got the aftermath of a failed mission. Congratulations to Gilmore Space for the attempt. Congratulations to everyone for giving it a try. Look, it is a sad day at the moment. However, these things are they are covered in sensors, like a lot of sensors. And basically what that means is that they'll get all that data and they will be able to analyze the data and find out exactly what went wrong, how it went wrong, and they'll find out exactly what to do better next time. So just to recap really quickly, the rocket went up slightly. There was insufficient thrust. It kind of wandered sideways. And what you can see now is the steam at the top there and the black. That black smoke is what is left of the rocket. So the rocket didn't actually work at all. It was good sounds, though. Good sounds. However, it has been an absolute failure. So it's one of those things. It has a failure. They'll fail fast and fail forward. So what that means is they'll gather all the data. They'll take it all back. They'll analyze it. It may mean there's a slight delay for their next launch attempt, which could be anywhere between the end of this year and the end of next year. There's a lot of data that they need to get through to actually make sure that they've done the right thing. There will also be an investigation into this as well, because the Civil Aviation and Safety Authority, or CASA, will know, oh, there was a boom. That's the rocket exploding. Huh. It blew up. Yep, it blew up. There is your proof that it blew up. So the question was, did it blow up? Yes, it did. It absolutely blew up. There it is. And that's the end of that. That's such a shame. Oh, exciting for a minute. For a minute, that was really exciting. That was really exciting. I really thought that was going to go. Yep, that boom was the end of the rocket. So hopefully it hasn't actually taken out their infrastructure that's over there, their vertical, horizontal mounting facilities, all that sort of stuff, or horizontal integration facilities. Yes, but that is the end of the ERA's rocket. So first attempt of an all-Australian-made rocket, and unfortunately it has ended in a bit of an explosion. So, yes, there was definitely a boom that happened, and that is a result of all the propellant that's actually now burning off. Luckily, all the space crew are all safely away from this, at least a couple of kilometres away, and they would be completely safe. So it's a moment of actually picking through exactly what happened and then figuring out how to improve for next time for the next launch. My estimation would be that they won't be launching until at least next year. So that's the end of the Aeris rocket, the test flight one. Unfortunately, was a explosion at the end.
And that commentary was an unofficial one by the Aussie Nort. He's a private person. Now, from my observation of what I saw, I wasn't there, of course. I've been watching it on online, like most other people. It lifted off the pan pretty much straight away, and then it began to get tilting slightly, even before it had cleared the launch tower, and then it started to move sideways. But the amazing thing was, unlike most rocket failures, when they fail at launch or very near it, they sort of tip over and end up going sideways or so on. Well, this stayed vertical but did translate sideways and then descended. And Channel 7 was with a bunch of people. I think they're about 20 kilometres from the launch pad. And one of the people there was the father of the Gilmore brothers. Now, the Gilmore brothers are the ones who run Gilmore Space. And here's what the dad said.
They say it was a faulty motor. They just tell me it was a faulty motor. But that could mean anything. I think they'd be pretty glad about the fact that they got to that stage.
So this rocket, let's tell you a bit about it. It's 25 metres tall. It has a diameter of about 1.2 metres, although it can be expanded to 1.5 metres. It is able to place 305 kilograms into low Earth orbit. Now, that means usually an orbit around about 500 kilometers. And it can place objects from Bowen. It can place objects either into an equatorial orbit, that is going around the equator, or into a sun-synchronous orbit, which is one that goes around the poles, North and South Pole. It has four hybrid rocket engines on the first stage, and a hybrid means it uses both liquid and solid fuel. And each engine has a thrust of up to 110 kilonewtons. The launch site is in Bowen in Queensland, and this particular flight lasted 14 seconds. That's both the up and the down part of the flight. There is no satellite on board. After all, very, very few companies or governments even have been able to launch a rocket successfully into orbit on their first attempt. Rocket Lab came close. The Rocket Lab people in New Zealand came close. That would have made it into orbit, except that they destroyed it because they had a range instrumentation problem. It wasn't a problem with the Electron rocket. It was a problem with the ground instrumentation. All right. And there was no satellite on board because, after all, would you trust a satellite on a first rocket launch knowing that 99% of them fail on first launch? No. So guess what was aboard? A jar of Vegemite. Yep, not Marmite. This is what I would have put on board. It's Vegemite. So presumably it got roasted. Well then. That's our story with the Eros rocket, and good luck to the Gilmores. By the way, we do have an interview on our website at space.southernfm.com.au where you can find Peter Arwood's interview from several years ago with one of the Gilmore brothers about what the Gilmore Spacer is trying to do. Now, on to other Australian news. Five new Skycraft aeronautical satellites were placed into orbit last week by a Falcon 9 rocket from Vandenberg Space Force Base in California. This feature by the Canberra-based company.
And lastly, we had the Skycraft payload. Skycraft recently developed a new deployment concept aimed at maximizing launch efficiency and is testing a new deployer for their payload after completing extensive ground testing on today's mission. Skycraft is committed to making a meaningful difference in the lives of people throughout regions in jungles and island chains.
Skycraft's space-based air traffic management service will increase air traffic efficiency and address gaps in surveillance and communications. Utilizing over 200 satellites in a constellation, the space-based service will track aircraft globally. Currently, ADS-B coverage is limited by the availability of ground-based infrastructure. Space-based ATM can track aircraft travelling over oceanic and remote areas. In addition to ATM surveillance using ADS-B, the Skycraft ATM service also delivers real-time voice and data communication over VHF between air traffic controllers and pilots using voice and data to enhance the efficiency of air traffic. Operating in low Earth orbit across seven orbital planes, the satellite constellation provides global coverage. Delivering global service, the satellites that make up Skycraft's ATM constellation are designed and manufactured in Canberra, Australia, and utilize suppliers from across regional Australia for a resilient supply chain.
Now, straight after the launch, Skycraft didn't make any announcements. But this week, Skycraft formally announced the launch of this fourth batch of five satellites.
Skycraft are pleased to announce the successful launch of Skycraft 4 from Vandenberg Space Force Base in California on the 23rd of July 2025. This mission marks another significant milestone in Skycraft's journey to transform global air traffic management from space. With 15 spacecraft launched to date, massing almost a ton between them, these satellites will play a critical role in paving the way for Skycraft's air traffic management constellation rollout. This launch brings Skycraft closer to its objective to deploy a space-enabled air traffic management network in 2026 and will be used to demonstrate real-time ADS-B surveillance and very high-frequency communications to previously underserved areas, including oceans and remote areas. Skycraft 4 will also support the International Space Investment with India program, for which a grant was awarded by the Australian Space Agency to Skycraft in 2024. The primary objective of this project is cross-collaboration between multiple partners in Australia and India to develop a collaborative, affordable and resilient low Earth orbits positioning, navigation and timing system. This mission will also demonstrate global navigation satellite system radio occultation, reflectometry and precision orbit determination. These capabilities improve weather forecasting, ocean monitoring and enhance satellite safety in an increasingly congested space environment. Chief Executive Officer Dr. Michael Fratter said,
Skycraft's focus on continuously enhancing advanced technologies to improve air traffic control and ultimately make air travel safer is the driving force behind our company's success.
The Skycraft 4 mission marks another breakthrough in Skycraft's mission as the Canberra-based company continues to push boundaries to make air travel safer, more efficient, and more resilient.
In other news, Australia will have a direct involvement when NASA next launches astronauts to the moon. This feature.
As NASA prepares for its Artemis II mission, researchers at the agency's Glenn Research Center in Cleveland are collaborating with the Australian National University to prove inventive, cost-saving laser communications technologies in the lunar environment. Communicating in space usually relies on radio waves, but NASA is exploring laser or optical communications, which can send data 10 to 100 times faster to the ground. Instead of radio signals, these systems use infrared light to transmit high-definition video, picture, voice, and science data across vast distances in less time. NASA has proven laser communications during previous technology demonstrations, but Artemis II will be the first crewed mission to attempt using lasers to transmit data from deep space. To support this effort, researchers working on the agency's real-time optical receiver project have developed a cost-effective laser transceiver using commercial off-the-shelf parts. Earlier this year, NASA Glenn engineers built and tested a replica of the system at the Center's Aerospace Communications Facility, and they are now working with the Australian National University to build a system with the same hardware models to prepare for the university's Artemis II laser communications demo. Jennifer Downey, co-principal investigator for the Realtor project at NASA Glenn, said,
Australia's upcoming lunar experiment could showcase the capability, affordability, and reproducibility of the deep space receiver engineered by Glenn. It's an important step in proving the feasibility of using commercial parts to develop accessible technologies for sustainable exploration beyond Earth.
During Artemis II, which is scheduled for early 2026, NASA will fly an optical communications system aboard the Orion spacecraft, which will test using lasers to send data across the cislunar space. During the mission, NASA will attempt to transmit recorded ultra-high-definition video, flight procedures, pictures, science data, and voice communications from the Moon to Earth. Nearly 16,000 kilometers from Cleveland, Australian researchers working at the Mount Stromlo Observatory ground station hope to receive data during Orion's journey around the Moon using the Glenn-developed transceiver model. This ground station will serve as a test location for the new transceiver design and will not be one of the mission's primary ground stations. If the test is successful, it will prove that commercial parts can be used to build affordable, scalable space communication systems for future missions to the Moon, Mars, and beyond. Marie Piasecki, Technology Portfolio Manager for NASA's Space Communications and Navigation Program, said,
Engaging with the Australian National University to expand commercial laser communications offerings across the world will further demonstrate how this advanced satellite communications capability is ready to support the agency's networks and missions as we set our sights on deep space exploration.
As NASA continues to investigate the feasibility of using commercial parts to engineer ground stations, Glenn researchers will continue to provide critical support in preparation for Australia's demonstration. A NASA statement said strong global partnerships advance technology breakthroughs and are instrumental as NASA expands humanity's reach from the Moon to Mars, while fueling innovations that improve life on Earth. Through Artemis, NASA will send astronauts to explore the Moon for scientific discovery, economic benefits, and build the foundation for the first crewed missions to Mars. The Australian National University's demonstration is supported by the Australian Space Agency's Moon to Mars Demonstrator Mission Grant Program, which has facilitated operational capability for the Australian Deep Space Optical Ground Station Network.
Space Machines Company is based in Sydney. Unfortunately, its first satellite was dead on arrival into orbit. Undeterred by the setback, they are forging ahead to build Australia's largest spacecraft manufacturing factory. The Australian Space Agency announced the enterprise.
Space Machines Company and the University of Technology Sydney have announced an agreement to create a cutting-edge facility that could produce up to 20 spacecraft a year in Australia. The new Optimus factory is scheduled to be operational by the end of the year and poised to become Australia's largest industrial-scale spacecraft manufacturing facility. Located at University Technology Sydney's Tech Lab, the 800-square-metre facility is envisioned to create critical capabilities that will enable the sector to design, assemble and test 300-kilogram class spacecraft at scale. The head of the Australian Space Agency, Enrico Palermo, was quoted as saying,
"The OF-01 facility represents an exciting leap forward for Australia's space industry. This collaboration between Space Machines Company and UTS Tech Lab showcases Australia's commitment to being an active, capable partner in the international space community. It will help drive the Australian government's agenda to grow our nation's industrial capability, boost productivity, build economic resilience, and create a fairer society."
Space Machines Company is an Australian in-space transportation and satellite service provider. They have previously built and launched Optimus, their first orbital servicing vehicle. The OF-01 facility will have the capacity to produce 5 Optimus Viper spacecraft simultaneously, an evolution of the Australian-built vehicle that reached orbit last year. In June 2024, the Australian provider received an $8.5 million grant as part of the agency's International Space Investment India Projects Program. The funding supports the firm's role in Space Maitri, a collaborative demonstration mission between Australia and India. The mission, the first dedicated launch agreement between Australia and India, will see an Optimus Viper launched on an Indian small satellite launch vehicle. While Space Maitri will focus on debris management, it will also significantly advance Australia's domestic space industry by combining Australian spacecraft capabilities with India's launch expertise. The agreement announced on June the 10th could mark significant developments for the local space sector, including building skills, experience, and infrastructure that will define Australia's role in the global space ecosystem. Rajat Kulshrestha is Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of Space Machines Company. He said,
OF-01 marked a historic transformation in Australia's sovereign capabilities, shifting our nation from a consumer to a producer of critical space infrastructure to close Australia's space production gap at a pivotal moment in Indo-Pacific security.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
Kanyini is a South Australian satellite launched nearly a year ago. The Adelaide-based SmartSat Cooperative Research Centre has filed this report on its mission progress.
Over the past 5 years, Kanyini has delivered historic achievements as Australia's first state government-funded satellite mission, marking a defining moment for the nation's sovereign space capability. Launched aboard SpaceX's Transporter 11 mission in August 2024, Kanyini's milestones include, first, successfully launched a state-funded and built satellite and demonstrated it working on orbit. Second, achieve the majority of the technical objectives set out in the initial program once launched, including completing all commissioning activities. Third, demonstrate a design and on-orbit operation of Myriota's new Internet of Things payload to successfully process signals and communicate Internet of Things data from ground-based devices and sensors via the Myriota network. Fourth, the key spacecraft bus components, including the attitude control, flight computer, and power systems, successfully demonstrated their capabilities and continue to be fully operational. Fifth, demonstrated hyperspectral Earth observation imaging from orbit. Kanyani has captured over 50 images and delivered valuable data to South Australian government partners and researchers. However, it is not all good news. Recently, the Kanyani space mission has encountered an unexpected technical anomaly during its operation, which will affect some of the mission's planned extended research objectives. The anomaly has compromised the satellite's payload interface computer, and communication with the hyperspectral imager and Internet of Things payloads is no longer possible. As a result, the Kanyani team will need to adjust some of the planned research pathways for the mission. All other satellite systems remain fully operational, allowing engineers to continue to monitor and collect data, including telemetry, tracking and control information. The Kanyani engineering team is conducting a comprehensive investigation to identify and evaluate the anomaly, along with all potential causes and effects. The root cause is unknown, however, it appears to be solar radiation induced. Acting Kanyani Mission Director, Dr. Sarah Cannard, is quoted as saying,
"Despite this recent anomaly affecting Kanyani's payload operations, the mission stands as a testament to Australia's growing strength in space innovation, collaboration and talent development. While some of our research activities will not go ahead as planned and may need to utilize alternative data sources, we recognize that such challenges are a part of operating in an unpredictable space environment. The Kanyani mission team extends its deepest gratitude to its dedicated network of supporters, collaborators, and partners for their tireless efforts on this mission. The team is determined to continue to push forward and build on the accomplishments this mission has initiated by exploring further research and experimentation.
In order to support the objectives of research projects under Kanyani, opportunities and alternative systems are being put in place with mission lead SmartSat Cooperative Research Center continuing to work with mission partners to ensure their continued success. In addition to delivering major technical milestones, the Kanyani mission has had a huge impact on not only the South Australian space industry, but also our national space ecosystem. As the second satellite launch for Innova Technologies, it has driven substantial growth in both technical expertise and workforce capability across advanced manufacturing, systems engineering, satellite integration, testing, and mission operations. The Kanyani mission has been instrumental in the development of seven separate SmartSat Cooperative Research Centers projects, including international collaborations with the European Space Agency and the United States National Aeronautics and Space Administration. The Kanyani mission has enabled Myriota to test and prove its in-house Internet of Things payload in orbit, with the mission findings being applied to the development of the newest version of its Internet of Things payload. The Kanyani mission team are immensely proud of the historic achievements of this mission. Kanyani has already achieved its key mission objectives, from building local sovereign space capabilities to making profound impacts on the development of skills and know-how and creating local jobs. The data collected by Kanyani will allow the continued development of valuable knowledge that will inform and strengthen future missions. Most importantly, this mission has successfully achieved its critical aims, including establishing space heritage for South Australian partners.
Kanyani. Kanyani, Kanyani, return, return. Kanyani, 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 return, return. Oh, Kanyani, 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 return, return.
On Southern FM, you're listening to The Space Show.